Welcome to the sermon podcast of South Hills Church in Costa Mesa. My name is Chris Kretzu, and I'm the campus pastor here. Thank you for carving out the time to listen to this today. I hope that you will be encouraged and challenged, and ultimately that you'll have a deeper sense of God's love for you. I'll be back after the message is over, but until then, I hope that you enjoy this episode. Man, it is great to be here. My name is Chris. I'm the campus pastor here at South Hills in Costa Mesa, and we are in Family Month. And I know that every family looks different. Every family is shaped different. Every family is dealing with different things and has different challenges. There are families that parents are divorced or separated or remarried. There's married couples that don't have kids. Every way you can slice this pie, I get it. And what I want you to hear is that whether you're married, with kids, without kids, single, empty nester, etc., what we're talking about is really the core of relationships. So some of you have, a spouse and kids in your home, and we're talking about those relationships. Some of you are interacting with your adult siblings and adult parents, and I guess most parents are adults, at least physically speaking. So we're talking about those. Some of you have friends that you would say, this is my family. These people are my chosen family. And we're talking about those relationships. We're talking about the relationships that are most crucial to you. And we're in week 3 today. You can catch up if you'd like to. A number of years ago, it was about 4 years ago, we were in Montana. And we went up to Glacier National Park. It was beautiful. I was so excited to go. And so we got to spend some time driving through the park. We pull off and play in the river, which was freezing cold, but it was summer. So it was very hot outside, but the water's obviously, it's not called Glacier National Park for no reason, you guys. The water's chilly. So we're having a great time. We keep driving. We get up to this road, and there is this kind of peak where the road takes you, and there is this lodge and all this information and a whole bunch of trailheads up there. And so we drive, we get all the way up to the top, and I'm like, you know what? Let's get out. We're going to walk around. And what I didn't realize is that the temperature had dropped about 25 to 30 degrees from the bottom to where we were at. And it was also gusty wind. It was freezing. And our kids were not really dressed for it. We weren't really dressed for it, but we decided, you know what? I knew that there was like a 1 mile walk, hike, if you will. It was like a gravel trail, okay? Up this slight hill, and then from that place you would get to see this, it's called Hidden Lake, it's this beautiful lake, and I was like, I really want to do this. I know it's a little bit chilly, but let's figure it out. So we dug through the car, and you guys have been on vacation with kids, there's clothes even when there's not suitcases, so it's like, let's find all the clothes that we can. And so here's a picture of the boys. This is about 4 years ago. So that's Arlo with pajama pants and jean shorts on over top of that. I think like 3 different shirts and sweatshirts. And so we decided, you know what, we're going to do this thing. And it was beautiful. There was a bunch of people out there. It's only a mile. Let's make it happen. So we start walking. And obviously, you know, not very far into this walk, my kids are very tired. They just don't think they can make it anymore. And I'm like, you know, I get it too, because the oxygen's a little bit thinner. And I know it looks like I'm at peak physical performance level, but... So my younger one at the time, he just wasn't going to do it anymore. So I picked him up and I started carrying him. And so we have a picture of that. It looks like I'm smuggling kids. So I'm just carrying him and trying to make it happen. And my wife's trying to be positive. And my older son can tell, like, I'm a little bit tense. You guys ever been on a family vacation before? You know how it is. Dad's a little tense. We're going to make this happen. I got a kid over my shoulder who I'm pretty sure either fell asleep or passed out from lack of oxygen. I don't know which one it was. And we get to this spot, and here's the view from the spot. It's called Hidden Lake. It's absolutely beautiful. Obviously, no picture can do these types of things justice. It was unbelievable. And we were there for about 30 seconds, and then we walked back to the car. It was a little bit longer. But it was great, and it's one of my favorite memories. And even when I was looking for these pictures yesterday, I just like got a little bit emotional because it was such a special thing. It was such a fun trip, and there were so many things tied to it for our whole family. And we all got to experience this view, but some of us did more work than others to get there. Some of us carried a little bit of an extra load to get to this view, but That sleeping child popped right up when the hike was over. That sleeping child also was awake the entire drive home, okay? So, and it's like this in our families. You know, the reality is that we all carry different weights and responsibilities. We all carry different loads in our relationships. If we're honest, we're a little bit upset about it. We want it to be fair. And this is never more true than if you were to come to my house when I told my kids to clean their room, there would be a huge debate on who did more work, who cleaned more things. That's not even mine, and I still cleaned it up, which is like a bold thing to say to your mother, right? You know, it's like there's this debate, and it's not just kids. Like, adults have this same thing where it's like we want to know that other people are doing the work. They're putting in the effort. We long for this reality where all of a sudden, somehow magically, we all do the same amount of stuff and everything gets done. In every relational dynamic, there is some form of inequity. In every relationship, spouses, parent, kid, friends, adult siblings, whatever it might be, every relationship, there's some form of inequity, and we have to start to become okay with that. Not everything is going to be equal and fair all the time. Have you ever played the game, if you're married, have you ever played the game with your spouse, who's more tired than who? That's a fun way to ruin a night. But I've done, and you start going through the list, and then you just both realize how exhausted you are and how much you hate the other one. Like, it's like this really great landing place. And it's not that you both haven't been doing massive amounts of work. It's not that you both aren't absolutely tired, but there is just like this weird comparison thing of, you know, no I, but then I, well, you don't understand I. And it's a challenging thing. And there's a lot of people that argue about it, but there's even more that just kind of accept it. They don't say anything about it. They don't acknowledge it. They just kind of put their head down and they say, you know what, this is just the way that it is. And so I'm going to just keep pushing and pushing and pushing through life. And I'm going to be exhausted and tired and burnt out and a little bit resentful and a little bit frustrated. And it starts to bubble over. And oftentimes it bubbles over when people go to counseling. And the majority of people only go to counseling when things are bad enough to go to counseling, which is almost always a little bit later than you should have started seeing a therapist. And just to, for the record, I think that you can love Jesus and have a therapist. I do. Some of you probably should. And I think both of them are very important. But in counseling sessions, there's one Christian counselor who wrote a book, and he talked about some of the most common things that he hears from people. I have some of them on the screen. I can't do this anymore. All I do is give. I pour myself into everyone else until there's nothing left. My partner doesn't appreciate how demanding and draining my job is. They don't see how hard I work. I feel like I'm giving 110% at work and at home, but they act like it's only registering at 15%. My partner doesn't appreciate how demanding it is to do as much as I do for the kids and around the house. I don't know what they think I do all day, but they treat me like it's nothing. Is anybody depressed yet? Some of you guys have had this conversation this morning as you were trying to get people in the car and on the way to church. I mean, this is there's hope in this because you're not the only one. You are not the only one that feels this way. I don't want you to feel hopeful because you feel this way. I just don't want you to feel like there's something wrong with you. Or more accurately, you probably think there's something wrong with your spouse or your partner or your kid or whatever it might be. This is a common all play, all skate. Everyone deals with these things. That doesn't mean that we should just kind of put our heads down and be like, well, that's the way it is. But oftentimes we just assume like, well, I'm just going to have to deal with this. This is just the reality. And for some of us, especially people who are church people, Christians, Jesus followers, we actually feel like this is reinforced in our lives. There's scriptures that we're really familiar with, scriptures that I've taught on a whole lot, these standout verses. Here's a couple samples of these. Romans 12:1 says, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. And all the moms in the room were like, yeah, done that. Matthew 20, Jesus said, whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Luke chapter 9, Jesus said, you must give up your own way and take up your cross daily. And let me just be really clear. These are all true things, and these are all good things, and these apply to 99% of your human interactions. With the majority of people, we do need to be more kind, more sacrificial, more giving, more generous, more patient. For a lot of us, when you look inside your home or with that closest circle of friends that you call family, many people are loving, but in a way that starts to become unhealthy. They're giving, but in a way that starts to become problematic. They're generous, but in a way that actually has strings attached to it. And if you are convinced that quiet, unquestioned, one-sided sacrifice is all that God wants from you, then you will end up burnt out and discouraged also. That's actually not what God is asking from you or from me. These scriptures and so many others like it, they present us a paradox, because you cannot have a great relationship without sacrifice. But if you sacrifice everything that you are, then you will have nothing to relate to. If you sacrifice everything that makes you you, you will be an empty shell of a person, and your relationships will falter. They'll fall apart. A sacrifice is to willingly give up something that's of value that you own for the sake of someone else. It's choosing to lay down an aspect of yourself for someone else out of your love for them or out of your hopes for what they'll experience. A sacrifice is, and I don't want to hurt my shoulder patting myself on the back, but sacrifice is picking up your sweet, adorable son who can't hike anymore and carrying him to the lookout point so you all get to experience. It's a good thing. It's okay. And I can do that, or I could. I don't know if I still can. It's been a couple years. He's a little bit bigger. I'm a little bit bigger. You know. But a sacrifice, it's a good thing. It's okay to sacrifice. But some of us, we get to this point where we sacrifice, and something is on the other end of that sacrifice, which causes a massive problem. Some of us get stuck in a cycle of over-serving, over-giving, over-extending. And we become quietly bitter and resentful. And we break down and we blame others. And then depending on the relationship and depending on the nature of your personality, you shut down. Some people just kind of cut bait and leave altogether. I've given so much to these friends and they never give me. I've given so much to my spouse and they never do anything. And whether you just shut down inside of the relationship or you leave altogether, you just go and you swear, I'm never going to do this again. But if you're anything like me, if you're broken in the same ways that I am, you start to get to a place where it's like, well, I feel a little bit lonely. And the only purpose I've ever had was pouring myself out for others and giving and serving and caring for others. And so then you find yourself back into this relationship. No new boundaries, and you just begin repeating the cycle all over again. It happens to so many people, and it happens in the scripture as well. One of the most famous people in the Bible, a man named Moses, he had led Israel out of slavery, so they kind of get over the joy of their freedom, of being out of Egypt, and then they start having just normal problems. And I want to read a passage from Exodus chapter 18 for you guys today. And this was written about Israel, Moses, and like 400,000 or 500,000 people that make up Israel. But if you just changed a couple of the words, this could describe your home and your kids and your spouse and the nature of these relationships. It says, the next day, Moses took his seat to hear the people's disputes against each other. They waited before him from morning until evening, asking for snacks. Verse 14, when Moses' father-in-law, a man named Jethro, saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he asked, what are you really accomplishing here? Why are you trying to do all of this alone while everyone stands around you from morning until evening? Jethro's question essentially is, you're getting it done, but why are you doing it this way? Yes, it's happening, but is this your long-term plan? Does this feel realistic to do this forever and ever? There's got to be a different way. He sees that Moses is doing all of the work, which isn't effective, it's not efficient, but at least it's also exhausting. So there's that. It's not the best way, and it's going to cause issues. And some of our families, they work the same way. One person does the majority of the work while everyone else just stands around. And if I can say this as a dad and as a husband, it's usually the moms. I expected a little bit more cheering. Not from the guys, but from the moms. Yeah, the moms are too tired to cheer. Like, oh, finally, somebody said it. And it's not to say that dads don't do work. It's not to say that dads aren't invested. It's not to say that there aren't some relationships where there's balance. I get it. But there is this reality that so often in our homes and in our families that there is one person that carries so much across the line. And Jethro is trying to get Moses to understand this thing, and I want us to understand it also, that if for your family to regularly win, it requires one person to regularly lose, you will all eventually lose. Because that person will either leave, become a shell of themselves, become frustrated, angry, bitter. And some of you guys are like, well, I haven't really felt like my family's won in a long time. So we could rephrase it. If your family, if for your family to regularly make it through a day, it requires one person to lose, to not make it through a day. If just to get through the basic realities of life, one person has to sacrifice all that they are, it is not a winning situation. It's not a healthy situation. No one is going to end up in a better place because of that. That's what Jethro wanted Moses to understand, and it's something that we need to understand also. And at the same time, nobody can make you do something that you don't allow them to do. Nobody can draw boundaries for you. You have to do that on your own. You have to have those conversations. You have to step into those challenges. You have to articulate those things. About 9 months after we got married, a little less than a year after we got married, we moved to Des Moines, Iowa. And we were 26, and when we got to Des Moines, we were already like 5 years behind everyone else that was 26. Everyone had graduated, most of them with their master's degree. They all owned a home, and they had started having kids. There was nothing else to do. It was 14 months of winter every year, and it was just... And so after a couple weeks, I was like, well, I mean, maybe we should have kids. Let's get started. We hadn't really planned on having kids that early, but we both talked about wanting kids. And so I was like, yeah, I mean, what else? There's nothing else going on. There's nothing else to do. Like, you know. So we have this conversation, and my wife's like a little bit hesitant. And so then, you know, once a week or so for a while, I was like, hey, like, you know, at what point do we want to start moving this direction? And then I was just getting a little bit frustrated because we had had all of these conversations about starting a family. And then now there was like this hesitancy too. And so finally I was like really bothered and upset with her. And I said, hey, what's the deal? And my wife said, well, I want to have kids, but right now I just don't think that I can have another baby in the house. And she didn't say it any nicer than that. I just need you all to know. And after I picked up my heart and the pieces that were on the floor, like I knew the moment that she said it, I knew that she was right. And she had been doing so much and carrying so much and caring, and I mean, so much. And I knew the moment that she said it, that I wasn't pulling my weight, and it was just the two of us. And she was totally right. And so I started to put in effort, and obviously we have kids now, so either she gave up hope or I don't know what. But also, it wasn't just the one time. This is an ongoing thing. Literally 3 weeks ago, we had a huge conversation. She was a little bit kinder, but 15 years later, we had another conversation because life changes. Our kids are older. We're at a different stage. And she said, hey, I need you to do this thing. And it was this aspect of our finances that she's done since the day we got married, and she's better at it, and it stresses me out. And she just said, I can't do this anymore and the other things that I'm doing. I need you to help do this. And I said, absolutely not. Just kidding. It wasn't actually a question. It was just a statement. She said, you're going to do this. But it was uncomfortable for me. I'm stressed out about it just talking to you. Really, that's why I wanted to talk about it today, just to get it off my chest. But this is the reality of having these conversations. And I am so grateful that she was able to tell me that I needed to grow up 15 years ago. And it hurt, but I needed to hear it. I'm so grateful that 3 weeks ago she was able to say, hey, I need help doing this. Otherwise, we're going to be in a bad way. Like, this is not going to go well. I'm not going to be healthy. We're not going to be able to continue thriving. We have to have these honest, hard, good conversations. And I can't draw boundaries for her, and she can't draw them for me, and we have to have that conversation. And so whether you're married or single, whether you've got a group of friends, adult siblings that you're interacting with, parents, whatever it might be, these conversations are so crucial for us to have. The story goes on. We're talking about Moses and Jethro. Verse 15, it says, Moses replies, the people come to me to get a ruling from God. When a dispute arises, they come to me, and I'm the one who settles the case between the quarreling parties. I inform the people of God's decrees, and I give them his instructions. Moses is essentially like, you know what? They need me, and there's no one else that can do it. And I kind of like to be needed. And even though it's exhausting and frustrating and draining, I'm just going to continue doing this over and over again forever. They need me. And this reality is true in so many of our relationships. And Jethro points out the inevitable end result to Moses. He says, this is not good. You're going to wear yourself out and the people too. The job is too heavy a burden for you to handle it all by yourself. And again, and I know that this is complex, and there's not a one size fits all, because there's so many different size and shapes of families that are represented in the room. But none of us are meant to live life alone, and none of us are meant to be able to carry all of these burdens alone. Paul talks about in the New Testament, he talks about how the importance of carrying each other's burdens, the responsibility that we have when people are carrying something that's more than they should have to carry by themselves. We should step in and care and serve and show up for them in a different way. Jethro tells Moses, this is not good. You're not meant to do this by yourself. You're killing yourself, and you're ultimately hurting others in the process. It's not your intention, but ultimately, if you play this out, no one is going to be good or better off because of this system. Love does require sacrifice, but sacrifice does not require burnout. It's so important for us to understand that. We are called to sacrifice for others. We are called to serve and meet the needs. We have responsibilities as adults, with kids, as humans, as neighbors. Absolutely, love requires sacrifice, but we do not have to burn ourselves out in order to fulfill that sacrifice. That's not what we're called to do. But sometimes we kind of spiritualize these things or over-spiritualize them. Sometimes we just kind of, we glorify this idea that is really not the healthiest idea. I've heard people say before, and I've probably said it myself, I would die for my kids. How many of you guys would say that? Well, some of you parents didn't lift your hands. I would die for my kids. The question that I think that we have to ask ourselves is, yeah, but would you live for your kids? Would you do the things you need to do every day to be a whole and healthy version of yourself? Would you go to a counselor or a therapist to work through the trauma that you had in your childhood so you don't pass that down to your kids? Would you create an environment in your home where they're able to thrive and feel safe and loved and seen? Would you do the work on your relationship or on your marriage so that you give them a healthy example that they can model their future relationships after? Would you have friendships, actual friends that you go and hang out with, and your kids are like, oh, my dad's hanging out with his friends. My mom's hanging out with their friends. I want to have friends when I grow up. Would you live for your kids? Would you do the hard work every day? And we can move this out beyond kids. For your dating relationships, will you put in the time to become the person that you hope to find for yourself? Would you be as good as what you hope to find? For your friendships, I mean, we could go on and on. I don't have all the time, but it's so important for us to recognize Love requires sacrifice, but it does not require burnout. And self-care is a popular idea, but it's not being selfish or self-centered. Self-care is taking adult responsibility for yourself. It's practicing a balanced approach to personal health and well-being. I think that this is where one of the things that Jesus taught, somebody asked Jesus, what is the most important commandment? They were trying to trick him, and obviously Jesus is untrickable. So he says, well, the greatest commandment is to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is like it. The second commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself. And so many people know that. But in our minds, I think that we mentally replace the word as with instead of. Love your neighbor instead of yourself. Or maybe we replace it with more than. Love your neighbor more than yourself. But Jesus is calling us to a healthy connection point of saying, you need to love the people around you the way that you love yourself. And some of us don't love ourselves very well. We care for others better. And I think Jesus would say, hey, you need to increase the way that you love yourself so that it matches the way that you love others. Some of you love yourselves a little too much, but that's not what today's sermon's about. But what does it look like to actually balance this out? Because you cannot love others well if you are not caring for yourself. That's why in the airplane, when they talk about the masks falling down and you have to put your mask on first so that you can put the mask on somebody else, because you can't do it if you're dead. They don't say it that way. They're trained differently than I am. Pastor school is different than flight attendant school. Healthy family members invest in caring for themselves as much as they do in caring for everyone else. And it doesn't necessarily equate to be the same amount of minutes or hours or the same amount of dollars or the same amount of toys. It's not one-to-one, but we have to figure out, how do I care for myself as much as I am caring for the people that I love? I don't just take care of myself and ignore you. I don't just take care of you and ignore myself. I take care of myself so that I can take care of you. And people who do have a tendency to overgive, overserve, overextend themselves, usually they would like the people around them to step up and do a little bit more. And I heard somebody say this a number of years ago, and I don't remember who it was, but it stuck with me. They said, people will exist in the systems that you allow them to. People will continue living in the world that you allow to exist. Our older son's in junior high. He has PE. He's angry about it. Guess how many times he brought his PE clothes home the first month of school? Any guesses? Zero times. And he kept saying, will you remind me? Yeah, I'll remind you at 7:30 in the morning, but you're not going to remember at 2:30 in the afternoon again. Like, there's only so much that we can do. You have to remember. And then he finally remembered to bring him home. But he forgot to get him out of his backpack. So Sunday night at 9 p.m., guess who needed his parents to do laundry? And by parents, I mean my wife, because I'm terrible. And she said, I'm not doing that. You've already not washed them for a month. One more day is not going to kill you. So guess who learned how to do laundry that week? Yeah. And he probably should have learned earlier. But there's this reality that as long as we allow that system to exist, it's not really his fault. It's like at some point we got to draw a line and be like, no, bro, you stink. You got to do your own laundry. We're all going to be better off for it. And it's, you know, if anything, it's our fault. We should have helped him figure that out sooner, that responsibility sooner. He could have figured out how to do that a little bit sooner. Anyways, I digress. Ultimately, Jethro is trying to invite Moses to see that there is an alternative. In verse 20, he says, teach them God's decrees and give them his instructions. Show them how to conduct their lives. But select from all the people some capable, honest men who fear God and hate bribes. Appoint them as leaders over groups of 1,150 and 10. Ultimately, what he's saying is, you know what? all 400 plus thousand of these Israelites, they do need you for now. But your responsibility is to help them grow and develop and learn and figure out other ways of existing. He goes on, he says, appoint them as leaders over groups of 1,000, 150, and 10. Obviously, there's some people that can oversee 1,000. There's some people that can oversee 10. And you have those people in your family as well. There's some people that can do a few things. There's some people that can do a lot of things. And our role in a healthy family, and whatever your family dynamic is to say, hey, how do I continue to care for, teach, train, disciple, mentor, parent, have a conversation with my spouse, lean on my adult siblings, whatever it might look like. And if we do this right, it should encompass all areas of our life, not just laundry, but physical, emotional, financial, relational, and spiritual. We should be helping each other learn and grow in all of these different areas. It's hard at first to get started, but it snowballs over time. Jethro tells Moses that there is an end result. In verse 23, he says, if you follow this advice, and if God commands you to do so, then you will be able to endure the pressures, and all of these people will go home in peace. I wonder how many of you would like to know that you will be able to endure the pressures this week, this month, this school year, this pay period, this season of life. I wonder how many of you would like to know that your home will be a place of peace. You'd like it to happen, but it takes something from you. It takes intentionality from you. In the 1800s, there was a guy named Samuel Plimsoll, a very manly man. It's a manly beard right there. And he was this kind of British politician and social reformer. And he spent his time fighting for the good of sailors and men who worked on shipping vessels. I shared this about a year ago at our guys' breakfast. So if you're a guy in here, don't spoil the plot. This guy, what he saw was happening is that there was an inordinate amount of people that were dying on the seas. On these merchant vessels and cargo ships, there was way, way, way too many people dying and ships sinking. And what happened is that over time, as the ships were docked in the harbor, the owners of the ships would be like, all right, well, we can see the ship is floating, so let's keep putting things on it. Put more cargo, more boxes, more stuff. And obviously in the harbor, tied up to the dock, it's like, yeah, it can hold a lot. And then it would leave the harbor, and there would be choppy waters or a storm or all kinds of different weather conditions. And what was really doable in the harbor is not a reality. And these ships would sink and people would die. And so ultimately, over time, after championing this cause for years, the British Parliament established this law that required every ship to have a line painted around the hull of the ship. It's called the Plimsoll Line. And you guys have probably seen this. Whenever you look at these massive cargo ships, there always seem to be two different colors. And there's these markings. Sometimes they're called load lines. This was something that just began in Britain, and then now it's something that every cargo ship around the world has to have. And this Plimsoll Line is this requirement. And what it says is, I know that the boat looks like it can carry more, and maybe it can carry more in the water, in the harbor, where it's docked and very calm. But once you get out into the realities of life, it's going to get destroyed. You're going to die. You will not be able to make it. And I can't escape the thought, the reminder, the reality for so many of us, so many of you that are like, you know what? I'll take that on. Yeah, I can do one more thing. Yes, I can take that responsibility. Been doing it for the last 15 years. I can do it for another 15, whatever it might be. And that's just not the reality. You were not made to do that. I could carry my kid at Glacier National Park for a half a mile, and I made it. But I can't carry him forever, especially now. He's bigger. I'm tireder. Is that a word? There's like things that you can do for a season, for a time. And I'm not saying that that's not a reality for us. I'm not trying to paint some picture of relaxation and enjoyment forever. But we have to be able to recognize when what we're carrying is too much. And some of us have loaded it on ourselves, and some of us have had other people that have loaded it onto our backs, and we have to have those conversations. Do you have a Jethro person in your life that's able to say, hey, you're doing too much. You got too much stuff. You need help. There's a better way to do this. Not everybody has that. It's an awkward conversation. It's a hard conversation. Some of you guys maybe have a spouse or a partner you need to have that conversation with. We need to recognize what that looks like to actually step in and carry things, to share the responsibilities. Every once in a while, let me be very, very clear, and this won't be a surprise at all. My wife does way more than I do in our home. And every once in a while, she'll say something like, thank you for helping with the dishes. And I cringe, even though I want to be patted on the back for doing the dishes, because they're my dishes. It's not like somebody else's stuff that I'm doing. I have friends who have said things like, oh, I've got to watch the kids this weekend. No, you don't. They're your kids. You're spending time with your kids this weekend. There's a difference. What does it look like for us to recognize, like, this is my family. This is my life. This is our stuff. These are our responsibilities. And we need to continue to have conversations, because what worked 5 years ago or 10 or 20 or 40, it might not work anymore. And for the sake of her or him or us or this, it's worth having these conversations. So this week, what I want you to do is I want you to ask your family if they think you overserve or underserve in your home, and what they think you being more balanced would look like, and implement one of their suggestions. Now, this might seem like a crazy idea, but let me tell you what I think will happen, because this happened in a conversation with my kid. This was last summer. We had plans, all these adventures, and then there were some days it was just like, hey, we're just lounging, we're watching screens, we're hanging out. And so he played his Nintendo, which he loves more than anything in life, for about a solid 7 hours that day. Don't judge me. Okay. So then when it was time to turn it off, he had a meltdown because he barely got to play his Nintendo that day. And after I came back down to earth, I said in a very calm and loving pastorly tone, how much time do you think that you should play your Nintendo every day? And he said, I don't know, like an hour? And I said, I agree. And today you had 7 hours of that. And I would be willing to bet that if you had this conversation, I bet that your kids, your spouse, your partner, I bet if you had this conversation, people would say things that might surprise you. They would recognize that there may be some things that they need to do for themselves. I bet if you asked your spouse, do you think that I do too much in our house? They will probably perk up and be like, uh-oh, it's time to pay the piper. I have done too little for too long. Have these conversations, because I really truly believe that through, on the other side of these hard conversations, there is health and wholeness and a fullness of life. And yes, love requires sacrifice, but sacrifice does not require burnout or quiet resentment or bitterness. There's a more beautiful version of relationships and family on the other side of these difficult conversations. Let's pray together. Well, regardless of where you may be at in your faith journey, I believe that everyone has a next step that they can take. If you'd like more information about what it means to put your trust in Jesus, information about getting baptized, or maybe even attending a Discover class to grow more in your faith, you can visit us online at southhills.org/Costa Mesa, and then scroll down to the Next Steps section. If you'd like more information about tithing or supporting South Hills financially, you can visit southhills.org/giving. Thanks again for listening today, and I hope that I get to see you soon.